Welcome to the Whole and Healthy Vibe podcast, a show to help you shift away from the diet and dogma towards a whole and healthy life.
We're your hosts, Laura and Kezia, health coaches, cake lovers, and body positive warriors. Let's get the show started.
So in today's Whole and Healthy Life podcast, we are going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, and we're actually going to deep dive into one of the current kind of healthy, trendy, fashionable health foods that are out there, and that is bone broth. So I know some of you might be like, oh yeah, I love bone broth, and some of you might think, oh my goodness, the idea of boiling bones is not my thing. Well, today we have got expert Roz here with us, who owns the Boa Broth Company, and we're going to kind of deep dive into all things broth. So spoiler alert, I really like broth, and so does Roz. So this might be slightly biased towards the bone broth love, but what we're going to do is look in a little bit more, tell you a little bit about its benefits. Roz is going to explain a little bit about her journey and why she started the company, and kind of my secret ulterior motive is hopefully at the end of this episode, you'll either all go and buy some bone broth or get your slow cookers out and make some bone broth. So hello, Roz. Welcome to the Whole and Healthy Live podcast.
Hello, Kezia. Happy to be here.
Yay, I'm so glad you could join us. This is fun. So tell us, in kind of Cilla Black blind date style, what's your name, full name, and where do you come from?
So my name is Rosamond Heathcote, and I come from originally a tiny little village in Sussex on the coast, and I've lived in London for the past 4 years.
Fab. I love your name. I feel like your name should be in like a Wuthering Heights book or something.
I think that's what my parents were going for, but sadly I go by Roz most of the time.
Yes. So not you've dashed glamorous. That image for them of just like being like Heathcliff on a field. Yeah,
exactly.
That is fun. So tell us, before we dive into all things broth, very important question is, what did you have for breakfast today? And actually, I'll start with that first. What was your breakfast?
Right. So this is a controversial one, because I am not a huge breakfast person. So I'm quite into intermittent fasting. I have to say, for me, I like eating in a very small window. So I normally have lunch and an early dinner, and that's it. So I'm really not a breakfast person. I'll normally wait till at least midday before I consume something.
Yeah, that's perfect. I've tried intermittent fasting. For those of you that are listening, don't know what intermittent fasting is. It's basically where you, like Roz is saying, you just make your eating window really, really short. So you might stop eating at like 6 o'clock at night, and then you maybe wouldn't have your first proper meal until maybe 12 the next day. And there's actually some really great research backing up intermittent fasting. A lot of people find it really helpful for weight loss, but also a lot of people have found it has some really great neurological benefits for, I think it's around human growth hormone, isn't it? And you're kind of keeping your kind of brain on fire and all the right kind of hormones and signals shooting off for that. So intermittent fasting, it's something I've researched actually quite a bit for various different clients, and tried myself actually, but my adrenals don't like it, which is unfortunate. Yeah, it's one of those things that I was like, this is so many great clinical research behind it. Yes. And I'm not that hungry in the morning. So I didn't find it difficult to do, but my adrenals are still slightly on the complaining side. I need to need to give them a bit of more TLC as the months go on. Okay, so your breakfast is zero breakfast, controversial, yes. But I like that. And what are your kind of daily rituals or kind of morning practices, if you have any, that get you started in the day?
Yeah, so I'm quite lucky, really, because I work from home a lot. And despite living in Northwest London, it's extremely peaceful where I live. So it's great, actually. So I have a flatmate, and she goes off to work each day. She's an architect. So I have the house to myself. So I like silence. I grew up in a very, very quiet little village. So I have my good couple of hours where it sounds, yeah, a bit pious, but I don't eat anything, I don't really drink anything, and I have a couple of hours of just being silent and a bit sort of mindful. I'm a bit of a God botherer, so I like, you know, doing a bit of praying, a bit of meditating.
God botherer, I love that phrase.
Yeah, no, I'm all into, I mean, everything I do that's sort of positive, I don't really like to give myself any credit for, because I just think I'm channeling good things.
So
I'm very much of that mindset. So I try and do a bit of hashtag gratitude.
Yes.
You know,
hashtag blessed.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I find that all a bit cringy, but I am, it's, you know, there is something to it. So, yeah, that's pretty much my mornings are very quiet. And then I always head out to work. So I'll take my laptop with me. And I've got a couple of great sort of free range organic cafes near me, and I will sit in there for a good 2 or 3 hours and just work away, making quiet phone calls and emailing. And yeah, that's generally up until mid afternoon. Then I come home, and then I'll work from home for the rest of the day. And then I generally make, you know, plans for the evening, because that's also good for one's mental health, is to not be on their own the whole time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of how I work. And then I obviously work closely with my kitchen, who are down in East London. So I'll pop down there regularly and just work out what the plans are and the schedules and everything.
Nice. That sounds like a lovely day.
Yeah. It's really not like too
that.
Bad.
No, it's funny. Like, I work from home as well. So I recently was having my kitchen sort of renovated and all of that sort of stuff. And it's, but it lasted much longer than was originally planned, as these things do. And so it was only last week that the builder was not basically coming to the house every day. And he was a lovely guy. We had great chat about, you know, world conspiracies and health and life and all that kind of thing. But when he left, I was just like, oh my goodness, like, it's so nice having the whole place to myself again. Because I've just definitely just leaned into more recently, like, how much I do actually really like being alone. And that's okay. Like, giving just myself permission for that. It doesn't mean I'm weird. Doesn't mean I'm a loner. And yeah, I do have good boundaries in where it's like, okay, Kezia, you need to go and like talk to someone or go see your friends. Like, the structure to connect with people. But actually being like, I actually had this like a declaration, affirmation, whatever you want to call it, for a while, of like, it's okay to love being alone, because I don't think we often are told that we have that permission. And it's equal. Like, I have friends that are complete extroverts and get so much life and energy from being with people 24/7. And that's also okay. There's permission for that. But there is something powerful when you just own what energizes you and go with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've sort of talked a lot about to different people about extroverted introvertism, it's called something like
an omnivert.
Yes. Exactly. And that's exactly what I think I am, because I'm very sociable and I love company and I love people, but equally I have to have at least one, if not 2 hours, completely alone a day. Mm-hmm. So, and I've been aware of that ever since I was a little girl, actually. If I have friends over, my mum said she'd always see the relief on my face when I, you know, when they left, because I just needed that time. Because I think I think a lot, so I just need to reflect on my own for a good couple. And they say it's a sort of masculine thing, you know, how men have to go to their cave and reflect on things, and women need to talk things out. But I think there are plenty of women who also need to do that.
Yeah,
and that's definitely sort of not talked about enough, I think. But yeah, I agree, there's a balance. You know your boundaries when you spend too much time on your own.
Yes.
And when you need to see people. So it's good to know that. Yeah.
No, it is. I've been listening to another podcast called, that's all about, their research is based on the Myers-Briggs profiles, which I'm not normally a huge fan of boxing people in and labels necessarily, but they do a really great job of explaining what it is to what it is to be an introvert and what it is to be more extroverted. And it's almost like they did a really great description of like introverts, their world is internal, so they need time to like reorder and organize and arrange and contemplate their inner world before they're able to interact with the fully with the outer
world.
Wow. And I found that description so helpful.
Yes. That's a great description.
Oh, because yeah. I love the outer world. You know, I love friends, connections. Like, people are often surprised when I tell them actually I'm a raging introvert,
as I call it. Yeah.
They're like, but you're so sociable. But actually, it's if I don't get time with people, like it happened the other week when it was busy, and I went to bed and I sat on my bed for literally about 20 minutes staring at my feet. Just
yes.
sorting out my brain, like literally it was like a filing cabinet on my brain, and I was just like thinking and organizing internally, and then I looked at the clock and was like, oh crap, Cassie, you should go to bed, like you're just staring into space. And then but it's that and whereas more extroverted people, it's like they're out there, they have to almost order their external world, not necessarily because they're always tidy necessarily, but they have to speak externally to make sense and understand things going on, and obviously it's never quite that black and white that you know.
Sure.
But anyway, I've been kind of binging on their podcasts and just being, it's really helped me in my other relationships, because I have a very extroverted sister and I'm like, oh, I understand you so much more now.
Yes, in fact the same. I have a very extroverted sister, so she likes being surrounded by people all the time, which I've always found bizarre. But yeah, and it's true. It makes you really understand people much better when you start reading about this stuff.
Yeah, it does. Makes relationships much less contentious.
Definitely, yeah.
Which is always helpful. But anyway, we digress, as I knew we would, into personality types. So tell us a little bit about kind of your whole journey, Roz, through health and then through starting your business. Tell us where and how that all began.
Sure. So actually, well, it's interesting we mentioned sisters, because my sister suffered from terrible ulcerative colitis, which I think is becoming more and more common. Actually, I find the more people I mention it to these days, they know somebody with it.
Yeah.
But for people who don't know, it's an autoimmune disease. It's you know, it's very aggressive sort of stomach issue. It's similar to Crohn's, and there are moments of flares where, you know, you can be hospitalized with it, and other times when it's sort of manageable, and people have very different range of symptoms with it, and sort of levels of how aggressive it can be. And my sister has suffered from it for probably the past 10, maybe 15 years. Because of it, became very, very mindful of you know, nutrition and what to eat and what not to eat, and found that she could manage it quite well with what she was consuming. So because of that, I started to understand more about nutrition and was very interested in it, because you know, and lots of things started to happen in my family. Like my mother had always suffered from eczema and psoriasis, and she found when she cut out grains that it all cleared up. And my dad has terrible heartburn and a hiatus hernia, and he found when he cut out gluten as well, all of his symptoms went after 40 years of suffering, you know. So all these things we started to understand about how it's sometimes drastic decisions on your diet or changes could improve things. And I was having a particularly bad time. I have up until last week, in fact, excuse me, I was working in a corporate world. I worked in business analytics and I worked for a lot of big corporations. And it was stressful, and I had a particularly stressful time. I was living on my own, and I was, just suddenly came out with some awful allergy. Went and got tested on Harley Street, and they were like, yeah, you know, you've got an allergy to all perfumes. So anything with a chemical scent, which was really upsetting.
Yeah.
And became this crazy mission of me cutting out all products in my life that had any kind of fragrance. And that could be from, you know, washing up liquid.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's
so many things.
And it's kind of brilliant at the same time, because it helped me really look at everything in my life and look at what I'm putting on and around and in my on my skin, in my body, and also just in the air and, you know, everything. So washing detergents, and it just made me hyper aware, which kind of made me a little bit crazy for a little while, because you get a bit
it can do
obsessive.
That yes.
So I handed out to friends and family giant bags of beautiful expensive toiletries that I could no longer use, and got very basic. And it was the same with my diet. So I started to review what I was eating, and the allergy specialist said to me, you know, probiotics are good, you know, looking after your gut health, you know, there's a little research into it now, but, and I was aware of that already. So, and I knew that, bone broth was good. And so I thought, okay, right, back to basics. So I had a bit of a painful couple of months where I really cut everything out, sugar especially, and had a bit of a cleanse, really. I kind of hate the word cleanse, because it does bring on some ridiculous ideas.
Yeah, it does. I hate using the word cleanse and detox. But I think it's one of those things that the dieting world has distorted. But ultimately, our bodies are detoxifying 24/7, and they are cleansing 24/7. That's what our kidneys, that's what our liver does. So I'm on a bit of a mission to like reclaim the words of detox and cleansed, but in a whole food, like you're supporting your body's ongoing detoxification. But I think it's really important to have periods of time where, yes, you need to deal with any history of eating disorders or crazy approaches to food. But once you've done that, it's actually really helpful to have just little seasons where you just support the body's natural cleansing processes.
Yes. Exactly, yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And for me, it was about, okay, my digestion's not great, there was a fear there that I may end up, you know, developing something far worse and similar to my sister, you know, and I'd seen what she'd gone through. So I was like, okay, I've really got to get on top of this now. So, you know, and I was sort of, it's hard because you start reading about these things, and there's so much in the press now about pseudoscience and pseudo nutrition and whatever. But for me, I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to eat very basic food. I'm going to cut out, a lot of sugar, and I'm going to cut out processed stuff. And I'm just going to know everything I put in my body is a whole food, or I'm going to have made it from scratch. It's going to be bloody painful, excuse my language.
It's all right.
but it's going to be, that's what I needed to do. So bone broth was a big one. So I thought, okay, I used to make this as a girl, you know, I have sort of Jewish heritage, and we grew up with a lot of chicken soup. And I was like, okay, this is what I need to do.
Yeah.
So I started that, and I started on the probiotics, and I got better. It was, you know, for me, it was miraculous, because my life, my quality of life, not only the allergies, but just my energy. I realized that it was so normal for me to have bad digestion. It was so normal for me to have huge energy slumps at sort of early afternoon after I ate lunch, where I almost could close my eyes and be full asleep for an hour. You know, that kind of felt normal. And then when I got home in the evening, I didn't want to do anything because I was knackered. And suddenly I started running. I had all this energy and clarity, just my, you know, they talk about brain fog.
Yeah.
And it really is a thing for me. Like it suddenly cleared, the mist cleared. And it was, you know, I could just process things much better. And everything was just much crisper and clearer. And I just wanted everybody else to feel that way. Like, for me, it was like a revelation. Like, I wonder how many people on this planet are just walking around like a bit of a zombie and thinking that's normal.
Yeah.
And actually, you can feel fantastic if you just sort of cut out things that you've kind of been persuaded are normal and are actually quite damaging.
Yeah.
So, you know,
so huge. I think, like, I love... Often people are talking about, like, what should I eat? And you're just like, oh, it's just real foods. Like, food, I often describe to people as, like, food that doesn't have ingredients, food that is the ingredients. Like, you want, broccoli doesn't have a list of ingredients because it's broccoli. And, like, organic beef doesn't have a list of ingredients because it's just beef. Like,
exactly.
And making that the foundation, I think, can just be so huge for people. Massive. And it is. And you're right, a lot of the time we are persuaded that certain foods are actually, you know, that processed foods are beneficial and all of that kind of thing. And I think there's a time and space for them, but in general, real food, just normal foods that you honestly that your grandma used to make you, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, we especially you know, my generation, I'm in my early 30s, and I grew up, and bless my parents, because my mother feels so guilty now, but and she shouldn't, but we grew up on the worst diet. I mean, it was awful. It was so processed because it was such a novelty. You know, I was talking to someone the other day about chicken Kievs.
Oh yes.
And I mean, that was
so,
like,
gross.
So gross, but I adored them, and we had them three times a week, and it was this reconstituted chicken. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just like, what on earth had happened to that before that turned up? Yeah. You know, God only knows. But, you know, and like instant noodles.
Oh yes.
With this, like, MSG powder that you'd sprinkle over it.
That was my after school snack. Come home, add, like, some hot water for my instant noodles. Awesome.
That's it. I mean, and it was just all that stuff. We were at the sort of the height of overprocessed terrible food.
Yeah.
And margarine on everything, and all this stuff which was just crazy and, like, made in weird labs and not normal. And so it's a bit of a reaction to that, I think. And I think that's why there is this sort of movement, and then there's a movement against it. We're sort of the post-processed age, where we're really going back to basics. So, and bone broth is such a prehistoric thing, you know. And I read more and more about it, and I read the Weston A. Price book, you know, Nourishing Traditions, and it's all about how it was literally at the dawn of time, people were boiling bones in animal stomachs, and that would be drank, you know, that would be the soup that everybody would drink, and it's that basic. So I thought that there's got to be something good about this. I remember always feeling better, so I started making big batches of it and found that it was really, really hard to source good bones.
It's
really hard. So I was like, this is crazy. I live in London, my parents live in the countryside, I buy organic everything if I can, but getting bones is a real pain. So, and I live near Borough Market, and so I used to go there regularly, and I found a really great butcher there, and he had wild Cumbrian beef, and it actually wasn't officially organic at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I started using his bones, and we just cracked a deal. So he said, oh, what do you do? And I said, oh, I work in consulting, and, you know, I do business systems and IT stuff. And he was like, okay, well, I'll give you free bones if you can consult me and help me with my business a bit online. So
perfect.
I thought that was a great deal. You know, the quality of meat that they did there was so excellent. So I suddenly thought, you know, I've seen trends of this in the States. I have my siblings, my sister and my brother both live in California.
Yeah.
And I'd seen that there were brands doing this, and I thought, no one's doing it here. So that was it. I hired a kitchen and bought some equipment, and you know, begged, borrowed and stole till I could. I didn't really steal, I actually didn't have any money to do it, but I sort of maxed out every bit line of credit I had just to sort of pull a concept together,
yeah,
and started to design the brand and just based it on my home recipe and just scaled it up. And it just sort of made sense to me that if I make this, someone's going to want to buy it because I want to buy it. You know, that was my attitude. And I knew there'd be more people like me out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think it's like, so I remember going to New York years ago and you could get cups of bone broth just like, yeah, you know, just like you would get your cup of coffee. I was like amazed because I came upon bone broth years ago. I followed a particular healing protocol called the Gut and Psychology Syndrome Diet, which is also known as GAPS. And GAPS, that involves, yeah, a lot of bone broth and real foods, and kind of it's really focused on just getting your kind of gut health and digestion, sort of giving it space to heal and sort itself out, because the body loves to heal itself when given the opportunity. So I remember, and that was the biggest thing. I started this thing, getting organic meat, I could find that, but trying to find some organic bones was like, oh my goodness, like the only way I could find to do it at the time was to buy an organic chicken, but then you only get one set of bones, and then I wanted to get beef bones, and now, even now, when I found a good butcher who, they're not certified organic, but they're like grass-fed, local, whatever, the bones. Even there, when I first started getting my bones off of him, he was like, are these for your dog? I was like, yeah, no, they're for me. And he was like, what are you going to do with these? I was like, you're the butcher, you should know.
Yeah.
So I do, it is, and I often describe to my clients that I work with, I'll often describe bone broth as like, if you imagine your digestion is like slightly like irritated and a bit on fire. Obviously, guys, it's not literally on fire, but it, you know, as a metaphor, it's on fire. I often talk to people like drinking bone broth is like this nice soothing sort of water that just helps calm it all down and gives your body some good amino acids that it needs to like rebuild and repair. There's different cells and stuff going on, and so it's a very kind of anti-inflammatory sort of drink, which,
yes,
people I think often disagree with me of, because we've got such a kind of plant-based trend, if that makes sense,
yeah,
which I don't really have a problem with. I think anything that encourages people to eat more vegetables, I'm like, yes, you go,
yes,
eat more vegetables, everyone, this is
exactly
great. But I think it can mean that everyone just is like, oh, all animal products are highly acidic for the body and inflammatory, and you're like, no, some are, but not all.
Yeah.
And so
I think it's interesting because there's so many, I'm the same. I'm pro plant-based, and part of me wants to tell, you know, proclaim I'm plant-based, because it's like 80% of my diet is vegetables, you know.
Yeah.
So I find it really interesting that there is this, there is still, you know, there is a very strong movement towards veganism, and there's,
yeah,
some ethical questions about that, to do with the environment, and there's some interesting arguments for and against depending on the ethics of,
yes,
the way animals are farmed, and actually the way, you know, things like soy, which is heavily used in sort of vegetarian worlds, which is horribly you know, overproduced, and the way that's farmed is very bad for the land, and so there's interesting arguments both ways.
Yeah.
And I'm very much of the, you know, firstly, people aren't going to stop eating meat, so it's an interesting approach to say everyone should stop eating meat. But I think for me, I tried veganism, and I just couldn't find enough protein to keep me feeling good.
Yeah.
So when I do eat meat, it's really mindful, and it has to be the best meat I can source. And I was really lucky because I basically researched every organic farm in the country, pretty much for beef and chicken. And I landed upon this company who actually, they produce all the organic dairy for a well-known supermarket and for a well-known dairy brand.
Mm.
And that, because cows obviously have to be kept pregnant when they're producing dairy, which is an interesting process in itself.
Yeah.
The way they do with organic is so much more ethical than with your standard dairy. And so I was interested in them. And then they, because the cows are pregnant, they were having calves, and they were selling off the calves for other people to rear unorganically. And so they decided to start keeping the calves and keeping them organic and giving them this amazing life. And not overfeeding them, only feeding them grass and the farm solar powered, and all the cows, everything to do with the way that the animals are bred and cared for and cleaned, it is used, they use a spring that is on site that does everything. Mm-hmm. And then the cows fertilize the grass themselves that they eat. So it's like this beautiful cycle. Yeah. And it's off the grid, and I just totally fell in love with this farm.
Oh, yeah.
And so we got talking, and they were starting to produce meat, and they were partnering with a nearby chicken farm, and they were sort of trying to apply their ethics everywhere and get everybody's soil association organic, and they've done it, and they've got this incredible collection of farms all nearby in the southwest in Somerset, and it's just really ethical, and they're not going to grow too aggressively, because that's when things start to slip and ethics start to slip. Yeah. So they're very, very mindful, and they're experts. And so I met them and I said, look, what are you doing with your bones? And they said, well, you know, it's interesting, we've been selling some online and it's suddenly gone really well because people have got slow cookers and they seem to be wanting to make bone broth.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's what I want to do. So any bones you have left, sell to me. And we just started to talk and partner, and now, you know, we work very, very closely together. So I use a huge amount of their bones that would have otherwise been thrown away or incinerated. And then I sell them the broth back, and it's sort of selling incredibly well for them. And it's a lovely relationship we have. So I feel very close to the farms, even though I'm based in London and my business is in London. I feel very close to the source of where everything comes from, and I try to apply that to all of the ingredients that we use in the broth as well, when it comes to the vegetables and the seasoning and everything else.
Yeah, I love that. And I think when it comes to the ethics and moral aspects around meat, I think that is a completely personal choice that everyone makes for themselves. But I think somewhere in between. Like, I often will call myself, I don't really like dietary labels, so I often call myself a pegan, which is like a blend of paleo and vegan, because as you say, right, I eat like lots of vegetables, and I love that people who are vegan have that very conscious approach to food, to meat, like, you know, they're very connected to it, and I think that's amazing.
Yes.
But I've tried being vegan in the past, and it made me just quite sick with my health issues, so it wasn't ideal for me. And I think Laura's been the same. She was vegan for a number of years, and she ended up her period stopping and all sorts of things like that. So for us, both of us on the podcast have tried it, but it's not to say that doesn't work for some people, but it is whatever you think ethically, wherever you're at dietary wise, just being a bit more connected to the land, I think sounds a bit woo woo, but I think is awesome when you do it. And then it's just about your own kind of, the thing I love about bone broth is it does help prevent waste. I hate the idea of, I hate food waste. I'm one of these people that will keep a tablespoon of like bolognese sauce. If my husband throws it out, I'm like, Joe, I could have put that in an omelette tomorrow. How could you do that? And I think it is a great way of just making sure if someone decides that they are going to eat kind of animal-based products, to make sure that we're not just eating chicken breasts all the time, which
is
we're actually honoring the full animal, it's full life, and we're not wasting any of the life and nutrients that are within it. So when it comes to broth, what's your favorite way to enjoy it? Do you just have it in a mug? Do you put it into soup? Oh, actually, I think I saw a recipe on your Instagram for cocoa. Is that right?
Yes.
I haven't tried that yet, but I totally will.
Oh, do you know what? I actually, on my Instagram, it's a beautiful photograph of my hands holding the, and it's not that my hands are beautiful, but the photographer made it look good, of my hands holding this mug with the cocoa in. And it was my friend Charlotte, and she's an incredible food photographer. And I went round her house, and we were going to just do a shoot of a few recipes. And I said, oh, yeah. And she said, what's the chocolate for? Is that just, and I was like, oh no, we're going to make, hot chocolate bone broth. And she was like, that sounds revolting. Like, she was like, that just sounds gross. And so I made it for her, and you know, it's got it, you know, it has to be sweetened a bit with maple syrup, and we use coconut milk, and the beef, it's just this kind of umami. And honestly, she was like, dude, that is so good. Like, she was so blown away. And every time I post a picture about it, she's like, I still can't get over that, because she was so convinced it was going to be horrendous. But yeah, that I kind of love that, because it's kind of novelty. And, you know, we're always talking, I'm always talking to people about how to incorporate it in your diet, because yes, I do genuinely have it regularly on its own. Mm-hmm. But I realize that's not for everyone. And some people just don't really enjoy the taste of meat. And I find I have got some vegans who contact me and say, look, you know, because it's a byproduct, because no animal is killed for its bones. And this is in a way honoring the animal. Some people ethically also are okay with that. So they wouldn't eat meat, but they would eat the bones because it's a byproduct.
Yeah.
But they don't like the taste of meat. So they're like, how can I have it? And, you know, so we joke about that and actually sneak people's, you know, interesting recipes to sneak it in for the kids.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So it's interesting. But my personal favorite is Vietnamese pho.
Ooh,
you can pronounce it pho or pho. But it is just, because you feel the goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Of what it, you know, it is ultimately, it's all about the broth and it's all about the base, but I love the noodles, and I, you know, the freshness when you add lime juice and lemongrass, it's just my absolute favorite. And I think it's actually the other reason for me, you know, I wanted this, and I do add salt to it, which again is controversial and some people don't like that, and we don't add a lot, but we do add a little. Because for me, I wanted it to taste excellent. You could just pour it into a mug and it's ready to go. You can drink it and it's, like, to me, perfectly seasoned. But also I just wanted it to be an ingredient for foodies, because it's not, that's where I think, sorry, I will start a rant and you might have to stop me. But for me, I'm like, I love health and I love nutrition and I'm really fascinated by it. But I feel like there is a sort of exclusivity of healthy eating, healthy living, and then good food and good cooking.
Yes.
And it feels like they're battling. And yeah. So I meet these amazing chefs and they're like, oh, I love bone broth. And I've had them endorse, you know, they've had it and they're like, I just, you know, I haven't paid anybody, but they're like, this is a great ingredient. I'm happy to tell people to use this because it's a really good ingredient. And yeah. They're less mindful about the nutritional benefits. But then I have nutritionists who are like, this is great. Everyone should be having this. So it's really interesting, but they don't talk to each other and they don't always like each other, because a lot of chefs are kind of anti the whole anti-dairy, anti-gluten thing.
Yeah.
And then you get healthy people, you know, so it's an interesting, I feel like we're very much in the middle as a brand.
Yeah. But I so, love yeah. that, like, so much, actually, when you dive into just real food, it does just taste better. So, like, yeah. My clients often find that out, depending on what's going on, but if there's digestive issues, you know, be like, try and have some cups of bone broth a day. And people are a bit like, oh, geez, oh, I'm not. What? You want me to boil bones? I'm like, yeah. Well, you could. Well, thankfully, now you can buy it. But then they'll often come back to me and be like, oh, I actually really like it. It's really nice. They'll just start drinking. I even had one client that would put it in the fridge. And it, you know how it sometimes if you make quite a concentrated one, it can be quite like almost set in the fridge because yes. There's natural occurring gelatin. So his would set in the fridge and he would just eat spoons of it. He liked it that much straight from the fridge. And I mean, I have to say, I've not quite gone to that level, but he was like, this is great. And it is, I think people are surprised. There is, I think I'm a total food person, like I would in no way call myself a chef, but I love eating good food. And I think when you come across foods that are tasty, like they're actually going to make your curry taste better, like they're going to add a real richness to, because I put broth in curry all the time. I make a lot of curry, especially in winter, and it just makes it taste awesome. But I also know that everyone I'm feeding it who's around for dinner is getting loads of real awesomeness without them really even knowing. Like, it's not
exactly,
you know, people don't think of curry as a health food, which is a shame because I totally think it is. I'm like, we've got spices, we've got turmeric, you've often got garlic in there, especially veggie curry is a great way to get your spinach in there, or like even kale that, you know, I get tons of in my veg box, and I'm often like, what the heck do I do with all this kale? There's only so many kale chips you can make.
So I'm like, it's interesting. Actually, that point about curry is interesting as well, because, and it is, it's that, that's the other thing, it's the hangover from fat is bad. So people are like, oh, but there's, you know, there's so much fat in the curry, and you're like, yeah, but it's ghee, or it's, you know, coconut oil, and this is all really good stuff. Like, your body knows what to do with that stuff. So I find that fascinating as well, because there is still a massive hangover of people being sort of scared of things like of a lot of real food, because they think, oh no, you've got to take the fat off and add sugar.
No, it's crazy. I call it fat phobia. Often I go with I'm pretty passionate about helping people stop being fat phobic, because it's one of those things, like, people are often surprised by how much fat I eat in a day, and I, you know, I eat other food groups as well. I don't just eat fat. I eat protein, I eat carbohydrates. All food groups are good. So just before, people are like, Kezia only eats butter. Now, I do not only eat butter. But it is, the more fat I've eaten, and good fats, quality fats, naturally occurring things, like we're talking about here, not like chip shop stuff. It's just really helped on so many aspects of my body. So I think the resistance sometimes to, especially things like bone broth, can be the kind of fat phobia people have. And but I do think that is something. So hopefully, if it feels like it is changing, I think in media fats is getting a bit of a better name for it. And I think the fact that you get in bone broth, if you're getting like organic, beautifully sourced broth, you are probably going to get some fat in there, but that's like good fat, and it's just does the body so much good. So yeah, there's so many. I love that, the whole foodie and chef thing.
I agree. I mean, we do actually take the fat off our broth.
Do you?
Because you get so much.
You do actually.
And people feel a bit shortchanged if they buy a pouch of broth and a third of it is fat. So we take it off, and it's actually, you know, it's a product in itself is the fat. So I often take it off, especially if I was making it at home, and I cook everything with the fat.
Yes.
So, and I think that's going to be a big movement, is, you know, using animal fats, you know, going back to that instead of using oils, which, you know, I think, again, there's this whole thing about smoking points and all that, which I'm obsessed with. So, hence the reason everybody seems to be cooking with coconut oil at the moment.
Yeah, it's coconut oil and ghee.
Coconut oil and ghee. And I kind of get it. But, I mean, for me, coconut oil makes everything taste like coconut. So I have very heightened taste buds. So not everybody can taste that. But for me, it's just too coconutty.
No, and that's a good point about the broth as well. I often, if I make it, I will often skim off the fat once it's set and then put it in a jar and just cook with it. Because I think that is actually, that's a good tip if anyone is making it from home. Don't feel like you have to drink the fat to get to the broth.
No.
Let it set, skim it off, put it in a nice jar, and then, like, I don't know, roast some butternut squash in it or something.
Oh yeah.
And it'll taste awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually that's, you know, for me, I would love it if everybody made broth. Like, I am a business, you know, I have a business, and I obviously want people to buy our broth, and I do truly believe it's amazing, and I do, you know, use it myself because I believe in it, and I know how it's been made, and I know how everything's been sourced, so it's as good as homemade for me. But I also think everybody's has very particular tastes, and if it means more people are buying bones, there's less waste, or even using the bones from what they're cooking with, I think that's a brilliant thing. And just sort of understanding the effort and the beauty that goes into making it, because it does take a long time.
Yes,
we cook ours for 24 hours, which again, as a business, it's interesting. I talk to other businesses and they're like, how on earth do you make that work if you're cooking it for 24 hours, you know? And it does mean it is a little bit more expensive to make. But you know, so when you make it at home, you can really appreciate it. And I think people can make it their own. But I find this is the best next option.
Yes. So
that's kind of how I view it. It's not that I'm saying everybody should buy our broth, but if you really find you can't make your own, or you don't have enough, then this is a good another option.
Yeah, I think it's a great option. I was so glad when I came across your company, because my clients are like, yeah, I'm happy to put my slow cooker on, awesome. And other people are just like, you want me to buy bones? That sounds disgusting. Yeah. Or they just don't have time. They're not interested. They are happy. You know, there's always that time and money aspect that we balance with changes. So I think it's really great, actually, that there is a quality, organic, well-sourced, happy alternative that you can literally just buy off the shelf and know that you're doing yourself good, and the kind of where it comes from is being looked after as well, I think. And that's quite unusual. So where could people listening, if they the idea of them boiling bones, they don't love the thought of that, where would they find your bone broth? Where could they buy it from? And where are you on the interweb and world?
Yeah, so... Excuse me. So if you'd like to buy my broth, I would suggest going onto our website. So that's www.burrahbroth.co.uk. And there is a list of stockists. So we sell in a few retailers, Selfridges, and a number of delis across London. But also you can order it online. So if you click on buy online, it will take you to our partner farm, who are Coombe Farm Organic, who are the farm I was talking about before.
Yeah, they love. They sell loads of great stuff. You can get some broth and some organic chicken while you're there and all sorts. It's great.
Exactly. So it's really great. You can buy the broth and you can bundle it in with loads of great meat. And actually they're so... like on top of sustainability with regards to their packaging, everything's recyclable, and they freeze everything. So so again, you don't have sort of, you don't buy a whole box of meat and think, what on earth do I do with this? I'm gonna have to cook this all in a week. You can keep it in the freezer and use it as and when you need, and it's a much more sustainable way of buying meat. So it's brilliant. And so I'd recommend that, because they can deliver to your door, and that's sort of nationwide.
Yeah, I love getting stuff delivered to my door. I've really gotten in. I recently, like, I get a veg box. I get occasional meat boxes as well. So I'll do exactly what you said. I'll bulk buy some brisket and organic. I try to eat offal where I can, so which I know not everyone's a fan of, but I try and get some liver, and also because it's cheap, guys, if you want to eat more organic meat and you're comfortable with that from an ethical moral standpoint, getting some organic offal is super cheap to begin with,
because
you know, getting organic sirloin steak is sometimes a bit pricey, so I'll do that. And recently I've subscribed to a fish box as well, from a sustainable Scottish, no, it's not a farm, it's fishermen, you know, the collective of fishermen, that I've, so I'm obsessed with getting stuff delivered to my door so I don't have to go to the shops.
Well, it's, I have to say I'm the same, and I live in, you know, pretty much central London, and I still like getting stuff to my door. It's actually a more mindful way of shopping as well, rather than just sort of grabbing what's on the shelf.
Well, I spend less money. I do it because it's actually, when I've tested it, looked back of how much money do I spend, I actually often spend less because I don't get distracted by the homewares department, and then and then end up buying myself like a new duvet cover, and I'm like, Kezia, this is ridiculous.
I have to say, and like, you know, I could bang on about Coombe Farm all day, but they do, they also source sustainable fish.
They're
going to start doing shellfish as well soon. Yum. And it's interesting, you know, we have such a great relationship. I am like, I don't eat a lot of pork. That's sort of a meat that I probably eat the least.
Yeah.
Just because of how intensively farmed pork has been over the years, and I have less of a taste for it.
Yeah.
And we were talking, and I said, have you guys ever tried lamb bacon? And they were like, oh, let's give it a go. So within a week, I got sent a sample of lamb bacon.
Ooh.
And they're like, oh, we're going to put that on the site. You know, it's been, it's, there's no, you know, horrendous stuff being pumped into it. It's all grass-fed organic lamb bacon, and I'm like, this is the best thing ever.
Ooh,
like,
I am so gonna buy me some of that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so it's great, but they, yeah, so it's definitely a better way of, I think online is sort of the future when it comes to this sort of thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. So. And speaking of online, are you, where, if people want to follow you on Instagram, where would they go?
Yeah, so Borough Broth Company. So Borough, just for everyone, it's spelt B-O-R-O-U-G-H, because I know it's a bit of a mouthful. But yeah, Borough Broth Company, all one word. And yeah, that's me. That's I run the Instagram from my phone. Nobody else ever touches it. So it's
a real person behind it.
It's real person, and it's, you know, everything's real. It's me taking the photos, unless I tag someone saying it was theirs. But yeah, I'm not one for sort of blinding people with lots of marketing, so it's just me talking about what I've made with broth every day, basically.
I know, I follow you. Yeah, it's nice. Just good.
Oh, good.
Good old inspiration. Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us, Roz. This has been super fun conversation. I hope for those of you listening, you're a bit inspired to eat some more real food, and maybe if you've never tried it before, get hold of some bone broth and give it a sip and see what you think. It's probably going to taste better than you think. I'll tell you that. If you already eat meat, you know, it'll probably taste a whole lot better than you think. I remember having my first sip very kind of like intrepidously, like, oh my goodness, I'm meant to have this because it's healthy for me. And then was like, oh, this is totally lovely. So thank you so much for joining us and sharing a little bit about your journey of health and broth and all of that sort of stuff. And for those of you that are listening, if you like this episode, or maybe you have a friend that think is a bit intrigued by broth, you could tag them or share this episode with them. And make sure you subscribe if you want us to pop up on your iPhones and various devices over iTunes. And if you have any questions for us or for Roz or for anything we've talked about in the episode, then you can ask away at Whole Healthy Live on Instagram. And we, either me or Laura, or we'll get Roz involved, we'll answer your questions there. So have a great day, guys, and we will see you next week for another episode.